Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your host, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox, and still here at the 31st Biannual Pope and Young Convention. And I'm set up in the back corner of one of the halls, and right next to me is Jonathan Karch from Three Rivers. Good to have you with me.
Glad to be here.
Good deal. Good deal. So we are fellow business people in the traditional archery industry, so it's kind of fun to, I think we're pretty much the only trad guys here at the show, which is a little surprising to me.
Yeah. Oh man, I mean you see a few bows here and there, but I think you're right, for actually selling this stuff, that's just us.
Yeah. Which I mean it's kind of nice to have such a large audience here, and we're the only ones that are catering to them, but it would be nice to have some more trad boyers here. And I certainly invite other ones to come here in 2021 will be the next show. So be great to see some more representation, because I think there's a growing and a strong interest in traditional archery. I'm sure you guys are seeing that yourselves.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, and here, the nice things with coming to these events, it's not as much the selling, but everybody getting together.
Yep.
Kind of like when you go to 3D shoots and that, just it's more of the camaraderie of everybody together in that, whether you're selling not as competition to each other, but just
sure,
in this industry. And it's nice to put face to face and really be able to catch up and get to know each other. But for here, you would be surprised how many people I talk to where they shoot, they shoot a traditional bow. They may hunt with compound, but about all of them have, a recurve or a longbow that they love slinging arrows out of and that.
Yeah.
It's just getting over that hump to where they're like, to go hunting with it.
Make
which
the
I
commitment.
Get that, it's everybody has that point where you go, all right, sink or swim with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. When I made that transition myself, man, I thought I was going to be a vegetarian for life.
Yeah, it's it's so exciting, though, isn't it?
You know, because
it's like, you're like, man, this is it. We're really going for it. See if we can do it.
Yeah,
I've had a few hunts where I always love when you see one run at 100 yards out, whatnot. You put the bow up like a rifle, mm-hmm. and you're like, pow,
right,
would have been done. Would have been done right now.
Yeah, I never did do much rifle hunting myself. I had one legitimate rifle hunt when I was 16. My dad's old 30-30, and I missed a buck twice. And it kind of neat, I later that maybe within the half hour after that, this was up in some public land, and I stumbled across, found a guy's arrow in broadhead that he had missed a shot at some point in time years before, and I pulled it out of the pine needles. And And I'm still, fretting over missing this this buck at like 75 yards with my dad's old, octagonal barrel 30-30, and I pick up this arrow, and I had a compound bow at that point in time, it's like a black bear cub, as I remember, was the model, and it was pretty primitive, this is back in the mid 80s, and I pick up that arrow and I started thinking about, the story behind it and what this guy must have been, going through, similar to just the experience that I just had. And I thought to myself, man, if I can miss him with the rifle, I could just as easily miss it with with the bow. And at that point in time, I became a dedicated bow hunter. And that was, I made that switch at 16 years old. And
cool.
And never look back. And it helped that my dad wouldn't let me own a rifle to begin with. So, it was like either become a deer hunter with a bow in my hand or wait till I was 18 till I could buy my own rifle. The next year I shot my first bow, our first buck with a compound bow. And at that point in time, I was hooked and also, believed that it could be done. So at that point it was, it was all downhill from there.
Yeah. I especially here, like, man, once you start hunting with it, it's hard to put away.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Because especially out where we are, it's archery season. goes with over gun season, so you can shoot either weapon there.
Uh-huh.
I went well over a decade never touching a gun because it's like, if I'm going to be in the woods, this is how I like to do it.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me a little bit of the history of Three Rivers. Now, I've bought, you know, a lot of products from you guys over the years myself. It's been this great resource. You guys are based out of Wisconsin, is that right?
Out of Indiana.
Indiana, that's
we,
right.
We started in Wisconsin.
Okay.
The Karch family, we were in south central Wisconsin, and we had DMJ Archery, which mm-hmm. stood for Dale, Matt, Mom, and Johnny. I got my own letter.
Okay, all right.
And we did that in the 90s, and then late 90s, we bought Three Rivers Archery.
Mm-hmm.
And we picked the family up and moved to Northeast Indiana because we, you know, we knew what Three Rivers was because even then we were buying from Three Rivers and
yeah.
everybody was then. And, you know, good company, good solid crew there. And we said it's better to move us down there than it is to move them up to us, which
sure.
was a great decision. It really was.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that and spent more time in the Three Rivers building than I did in any house we owned, just because I remember once we were looking for the vacuum and it's like, well, where is it? It was at work because that,
right,
that's
right.
where we were more. That's where it got dirty most. So
yep.
so we did that, moved in 99, and I've been at it ever since.
Right.
My brother did 4 years in the Navy. I did 4 years in college. And even through that, you know, we were always heavily involved, whether just talking over the phone, brainstorming ideas and that. And we both came back. Actually, all three Karch brothers have worked for Three Rivers Archery at one point or another.
Uh-huh.
And also, actually, our wives, my brother Andy and I, both of our wives for at least short stints have worked at Three Rivers. It was kind of the rite of passage, right?
Yep.
Now
yep.
you can
there
get married.
Go.
And
uh-huh.
Andy moved back to Wisconsin. Right. My brother Matt's out in Colorado. And my wife and I and our three girls are running Three Rivers Archery. My folks are semi-retired now. They did that a few years back. Still involved,
okay.
but you know, not more the day-to-day as much.
Yep.
Teresa and our other management team, we keep it going strong, and you know, really sticking to what we've Three Rivers has always been for everybody, that traditional resource.
Right.
You know, like a lot of traditional guys can attest to, there's not a nearby shop
yep.
that can help them
yep.
With their stuff. You know, you may be able to find some field points or maybe one pack of feathers, but
right.
not like what we have to offer. And,
yeah.
You know, especially here, you know, where it's a lot of compound hunters, but a lot of people that still shoot traditional,
mm-hmm.
Appreciating the advice they get from us.
Right.
And I know that's been a big point for me when designing the catalog, what products we pick up, what content I write on the website, and that is being informational.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is a sport. It can be as pure and simple as you want it to be, of just mm-hmm. buying some garage sale bow and arrows, not knowing a thing, and going
right.
out and having a good time, or as complicated as you want to make it.
Yep.
With you know, FOC and
yep.
you know,
all the target guys.
Oh yeah,
uh-huh. string walking and yeah.
Any
yeah.
good hobby should have that. Have it as simple mm-hmm. and as complicated as you want to be, because that's how you you appreciate
right.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And Three Rivers really fits that spot of being able to be there for all of it.
Right.
And you know, my guys get the questions of everything every day.
Yep.
And they can answer it, and they're good for that. And then the website, if you go on there, I try to make sure that, okay, when I read about this product, now you have six pictures or less to show it to somebody, that they feel confident that they know as much as if they were holding it in their hand.
Right.
And so, yeah, yeah, we've always stressed information to make sure it's easy for people to get and appreciate.
Yeah, no, that's a great resource. I mean, for guys that are interested in setting their compound down, or just picking up a stick bow to complement their compound, and whether it just be for, you know, stump shooting or small game, or you know, if they have a buck tag and they're able to pick up a doe tag and they want to just try it out. I mean, that to me, I always try to steer guys towards that. If they're shooting a compound, they have that itch to try out traditional, but they're a little nervous, apprehensive, then it's like, hey, you know, do a lower pressure hunt, javelina for, you know, in January, or a doe tag that complements your buck tag. You fill your buck tag first through the compound or your rifle or whatever the case it is, and then go out there with a doe tag where there's less pressure, and I guarantee you it is going to be just as exciting, if not more,
right.
when you
up.
Have a stick bow in your hand. And I remember, you know, during that time that I was making that transition, I was hunting Iowa, and I had a buck tag, and I filled it with my my compound, and then the next morning I was sitting in the stand with my stick bow waiting on a doe, and when that thing came in, man, my leg was jackhammering and I was hyperventilating, and when I executed, you know, a good shot and was able to get that doe, I was just as excited as the previous morning when I had filled my buck tag. And so, for guys to, you know, that are interested in dipping their feet in, that's a great way to make that transition.
Absolutely. Well, and especially like javelina and that,
mm-hmm.
animal was built for traditional game.
Yeah.
I mean, just.
Yeah, same with hogs.
Yeah, I love hogs. Uh-huh. I love hog hunting with a bow, especially.
No doubt.
And but you're right. Yeah, I've, you know, pick that, some of the folks here, you know, talk about, like, well, you know, I'd pick certain days where I'd take the recurve, and then other days it would be my combat. So it's great, you know, find something that fits it, because it is such a whole different world too. Because like you said, you know, just a doe, but still all the excitement you have in there. And I love the way a steak tastes when I know I've killed it with my bow.
Yep.
And that it's just something about it where you go, yep, this I had to work for this.
Yeah, absolutely.
It tastes so much sweeter for it.
Yep. Now, you alluded to it already, both in that you guys have a website, threeriversarchery.com, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and then you guys also have a mailer, you mail out catalogs. How many times a year do you mail out catalogs?
A lot.
Yeah.
we do the big master catalog, big print, once a year, and that's a 120-page book. And that's what, if you request a catalog, we put in there. And then through the year, and I'd say it feels like every 6 weeks I have a little Slim Jim catalog. So it might only be 20 pages, but it really focuses on what's new. So you keep the master for the whole year if you get that, and then you get these little additional books that, like, hey, here's what's new now, or here's what's featured for, you know, for spring. Of course, we just put
bow
one out
fishing,
that was,
yeah, turkeys.
Bow fishing, and, yeah, turkey hunting, things like that. In the fall, it'll be a 20-page book of all, hey, here's the new latest and greatest hunting stuff we have, and then here's the old favorites of, you know, what you need.
Right.
Which is nice, because we're able to have the creativity a lot there of, okay, we only have this much space, and how do we make it a world stand out to somebody? And then, you know, because I love my catalog too, but 120 pages is a lot to flip through if you get it every
sure.
couple months. So
yeah,
makes it nice. And then what really ties with it also is our emails, because we put those out about once a week.
Okay.
And, you know, offers or the latest of gear always end up in there. So I always push people to do that, because it's such an easy, you know, contact point.
Yep.
But yeah, about every 6 weeks a catalog mails out, I'd say.
Okay.
Give or take.
Right, right. Okay. And then, so from a product standpoint, I mean, you guys literally are backpacks, fletchings, field points, broadheads. You guys offer a myriad of different arrow manufacturers, fletchings, knocks, glue, you know, feathers, some production bows, all the way from a Sage Samick on up to some high-end production, you know,
yep.
what would be similar to a custom bow.
Yeah.
So, you know, in strings, of course, string material, you know, string making material, if you want to manufacture your own string, basically A to Z.
Yeah, absolutely everything a archer could want, not just a traditional archer, but an archer could want. I mean, we really stand out for traditional archery with our bow selection and that, but because we get a lot of compound guys and even crossbow guys that either come in the door or call, and it's like, well, we have things that cover everybody when it comes to archery and that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, for traditional archery, we have, you know, it feels like everything. There's not too many things do I see out there. I'm like, oh, we either have carried it or we didn't know about it before, or it's got to be brand new. Because we try. We want it to be, you know, that one-stop shop for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, nobody likes paying shipping, and you don't like, you know, placing an order over here and then going over there for that.
Sure.
And, you know, want it to be like, okay, we can get everything you need in the box and keep you supplied. And then also have the advice to go with it of how to use it if you run into questions.
Right. And to me, one of the biggest resources you guys offer from the standpoint of a guy that lives in, you know, in town X that doesn't, you know, maybe has an archery pro shop, but they don't really cater toward traditional bow hunters, don't have that knowledge base that you guys offer, is, you know, let's say I sell as Stalker Stick Bow, sell a customer a bow and they need to get set up. They're able to call your tech guys and I'll give them some input as well. But then you guys also have a lot of even more experience as far as from arrow spine standpoint and you know, a background specific to traditional archery that most pro shops lack there. So
yeah,
I can send a customer two, three rivers, and with the confidence that you guys will be able to get them set up in, you know, in that ballpark, maybe, you know, plus or minus 25 grains on their field points to, you know, to get them in the right spine. And then you guys offer a fletching service as far as if somebody wants to get their arrows cut to length, maybe even pick out their own fletching colors. Is that right?
Yep. Yep. We've got actually on our website, interactive arrow builder.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the images change as you make your choice.
So you
can choose a shaft, spine first, and then you could be like, you know what? I want to see XYZ mm-hmm. colors, all three different colors look like on a, you know, fluorescent pink wrap.
Yeah.
Picture will change right up there so you can see it. And the nice thing is it's an arrow builder where we can build it for you, or you can just be like, okay, add the items to the cart and check out. I want to build it, but I just wanted to see what it looked like before.
That's something, man, I really want to do. And I've had people get, you know, requests from a wood standpoint, and I would love to be able to get my, you know, a riser with the three different, you know, parts there, and then be able to pick out the wood species and change them up. And the problem is, I mean, obviously there's so many different variations in grain and color of the mm-hmm. wood that it's not necessarily going to be a totally accurate depiction of what it'll turn out in a finished product.
Yep.
And you know, and then that creates some headache. Is like, it's not like what the picture was. You know,
for a guy with a 120 page catalog and thousands plus items of website for images, I can really attest to that. We're like, well, it doesn't look like. I'm like,
right.
I get it, but we're working with natural products here.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially for wood grain, that is such. As much as I'm proud of what our photographers are able to do, you cannot capture the beauty of good wood grain in a picture. It's just
it drives me crazy. Yeah. I don't know how many times, even in the last 2 days, I've had people come by and look at my bows here on the rack and go, man, I look at them in the catalog and they're really nice, but wow, you know, when you come and look at the natural wood and the combinations and get to pick it up and handle it, it's an entirely different experience.
Oh, yeah. But Cody's one of my favorite just because mm-hmm. You'll never get a picture that shows it well compared to when you see it in person. You go, that's the wood.
Yeah, but Cody, you get a lot of bang for your buck. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful wood. And I like the density, too, for handles.
Yep.
It's got a good heft to it, and it absorbs vibration from the shot and what have you. So it is a great wood. I really do love that wood. Yeah.
But, yeah, and then trying to think. And we have a lot of other features on the website for arrows. Our spine calculator.
Okay.
Stu Miller, we partnered with him long ago to be able to offer it, and a feature where, you know, it gets hit hundreds of times a day for use, which is great.
Yeah.
Then you can work with the dynamic spine of your arrow and your bow to really, before you ever shoot an arrow, at least give you a good idea. I mean, it's, you know, nothing replaces shooting arrows to get it tuned in. But
so
this is like,
talk about a little bit about that spine calculator versus like a standard Easton arrow chart or gold tip that you that compound guys are accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it just really puts the math formulas in place to help. You know, this is on paper how mm-hmm. it should interact. So, adding more weight to the tip or to the knock end, if you have footing, how your bow is cut past center, and that mm-hmm. all those play into how the dynamic spine is going to interact with it. And this gives you, like I said, in math formulas of an idea of where it will be. Now, it's not always going to be perfect because we all shoot different.
Yep.
Many of us creep without thinking we do, because I always love when you hit that. Well, they're too stiff. Like, well, you creep at least an inch and a half, so it's different from what you put on paper versus that.
And a lot of, you know, it's interesting. I mean, there's a strong argument for a clicker right there, because I get a lot of guys, you know, that will come by my shop and they're like, oh, yeah, I got a 28-inch draw length. I had one guy in particular, I remember years ago, you know, he was like, I've got a 28-inch draw length, and I actually measured him as 25 and a half.
Yep.
You know, it's like he was totally oblivious. He thought he was drawing, you know, 28, and part of that was he was overbowed. And when I got him down into a lighter bow, his draw length stretched out. But, you know, particularly from a compound, I think that's like the biggest mistake guys make is ordering too heavy of a bow. I'm sure you guys see the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably one of our top 10 questions we get is, you know, what bow weight to go with. And it's like, I always push at least 15 pounds less,
mm-hmm.
You know, especially crossing over from compound.
Right.
You know, muscles are different.
Yep.
You got to get into it. And you can always go up in weight, but if you start too heavy,
yeah,
it just, it'll ruin you.
Yeah, and it takes all the fun out of it, really. I mean, it goes from what should be a really fun, pleasurable experience to where you're working and your accuracy sucks, and then you think at that point that, man, I can't be successful doing this.
Right.
And you just stack the deck against yourself right out the gate.
Well, because that's, you know, that's probably the biggest thing everybody can relate to with shooting traditionals, that confidence of being able to, you know, to shoot good.
Yep.
I remember when I dropped from 56 pounds to 45, and I shot amazing. Mm-hmm. I could hit playing cards. I was doing so good. And that, I mean, that really boosted my confidence.
Yep.
Because when you know you can make the shot.
Right.
You know, 45 can kill a heck of a lot of game.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
And I killed a lot of deer with that weight,
all
too.
All you do is miss faster when you're shooting heavier weight.
Right, right, yep. So, you know, and it always gets to be like, it's not a sales pull. I'm not trying to sell you, you know, two
sure.
bows to do it. This is so that you can enjoy it and you can get in there.
Right.
And you look at, I mean, all state regs, there's, other until you get out west there where I think it goes up to 45. In the Midwest, it's mainly 30, 35, mm-hmm. you know, for killing deer.
Yeah.
And so 40, 45 is probably our most popular weight.
All right.
Which where when you look, you know, even 10 years ago where it was the 50, 55 in that.
Yeah, and even, I mean, it's interesting when I took over the company that I've got, I got a bunch of, you know, notebooks with Charlie's, you know, weights and what his stack formulas and what he was. So he was building, it's interesting to see too, because so this was, the company sat dormant for about 10 years. So he was building in the late 80s and on through the 90s. And I'm seeing in his notes, like 64, 66, 68 inch bows, much longer than what I'm building now. And when I took over the company, I was building a lot of 56, 58, 60s. Now I'm building more 60, 62, 64s. It's trending back towards the longer, but he was building a lot of, you know, like his lighter bows were 57, 58 pounds, a lot in those low 60s to mid 60 pounds, and almost nobody shoots that kind of weight anymore.
No, we still get the special orders for, you know, the 65 and 70, and I always make sure my guys, like if it's a web order, we call them to kind of confirm, not to talk them out, but be like, all right, let's make sure I'm not building something that's coming back to me in 2 weeks, because it's
can you shave some weight off this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's been really neat to see how that progresses. Because I've been doing this since, I mean, I was 3 years old. So I've been doing this a long time for it and seeing the weight differences.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, back in the 90s, 60 plus was very common.
Sure.
And now that's almost a special order. I'd be like, well, I don't keep those on the shelf because I only sell one or two a year.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, it was interesting, too. I mean, with new bow designs, more efficient bow designs, better materials. I had a guy come into the shop a couple months ago, and he had a bow he'd been recurve. He'd been shooting for, in the neighborhood of 25 years, and he was shooting in the, I want to say it was the low 70s in draw weight. And he's getting older, and his shoulders were, you know, he just wasn't able to pull it as well as he used to be able to. And we set it up on my shooting machine upstairs and ran some arrows, his arrows through it, and checked the speed. And then we took one of my bows. It was 17 pounds lighter, shot the same arrow, and it was 3 feet per second faster. 17 pounds lighter.
Wow.
And, you know, same draw length.
Same arrow.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
It's like you do not need to shoot that kind of draw weight. You know, there's no reason to it. I shot, you know, two holes through an elk quartering into me last fall shooting 52 pounds. And there's guys that are shooting in the 40s and are shooting through elk.
Yep. I got a moose on the back wall. It was killed with 56 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 1,100 grain arrow, but, I mean, the bow was only 56 pounds. And, yeah, it went through both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's the kind of myth, if you will, that you need to be shooting super heavy weights to be able to make it happen is
right.
just not the case.
Well, like you said, it was a lot of the older bow designs, and that's that's the only thing they could control back then with it, or could control with it to get higher performance compared to a you know, lighter poundage. And now, yeah, you don't need to have that to still get the performance out of a bow.
Yeah.
Like we were saying, when you can control the bow and put it where you want it to be, 45-pound kills just as well as a 70-pounder when it's through the heart. So.
Yeah, and shooting a good cut to the tip broadhead, good
weight
behind it. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. No,
good heavyweight arrow and a cut-on-contact broadhead, and you will be in great shape.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys kind of have a branded, the Woodsman broadheads that you guys offer there, both. So there's the – Tell me the difference between the two of those, because I've shot both of them, but in your words.
Sure. Well, the original series and the Elite. The original series is a tried and true. I mean, if you've ever seen a Gluon three-blade broadhead, that's what comes to mind.
Yep.
You know, vented, long, lean, wicked design to it. And where the Elite is, it's the modern touch to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a machine broadhead, so we take, you know, round stock steel and cut a broadhead out.
Yeah.
It's an expensive process since there's a lot of basically waste to it.
Right.
But it's when it comes to strength and a broadhead, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, precision machine there. Now, I still hunt with the originals because I guess maybe it's the traditional in me, but I like a classic.
Yeah. And that's a welded broadhead, right?
Yes,
so
it is.
The blades are welded to the ferrule.
Yep. And actually, past couple of years, we've moved all the production of it. If it's not in-house, it's in the local area.
Okay.
By local area, I mean with, you know, 100 miles
from
the shop.
And that.
Mm-hmm. So we assemble them there. We send them out, get them brazed, get them back, check them for quality, and then we send them out, get them coated. They come mm-hmm. back, and we've got a grinder there. We do the sharpening right there.
Okay.
So really able to, one, control production to you know, keep heads coming in.
Yeah.
And then also the quality control is bar none. I mean, it's back to where it's like, okay, this is something I'm putting my name on because I have full control on it.
Sure.
And really proud of that. We even actually, I made a video a few years back of the process for it to show off kind of how we go about it.
Uh-huh.
And it's neat. It's especially being that close to it, to where it's not just ordering something and it coming through the door.
Right,
and
going, right.
Good to, hey, we've got to make it. You take these pieces of steel and put it together. And
yeah, you guys have a video on your website about sharpening them, too, as far as from a consumer standpoint, if they need to resharpen them.
Yeah, the Woodsman broadhead is, so a lot of people shoot two-blade, and we all have pocket knives and, mm-hmm. and knives in general of where, like, you know, when you feel that edge, you go, oh, yeah, that's it.
Yep.
When you go to a three-blade, the angle changes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can shave hair with all of my broadheads because I take the time to do that. And all I use is a flat file and a hone, well, and a leather strop now. But the Woodsman can be sharpened with a flat file because the way the blades are angled, you hit two edges at a time.
Yep.
So it's very easy to sharpen broadhead for mm-hmm. it. But I get a lot of people, which, you know, I don't blame them. If you're used to a two-blade edge, it's got that real fine angle to it. You know, going to a three-blade edge, it doesn't feel the same to them.
Yeah.
But you can get them sharp. Like I said, I shave hair with all my heads before I go hunting with them.
But all right. And then you guys sell all the stuff as far as from sharpening supplies, the files, strop.
A to
and
Z.
Then, okay, good deal.
Yeah. And when it comes to broadhead sharpening, it's really neat because there's a lot of things, you know, it applies over to all of it where you can sharpen your knives with it. And then there's a few archery-specific things, too.
Uh-huh.
It's like, all right, this is for sharpening broadheads and broadheads only, which is nice because then you really have something that's catered towards sharpening a broadhead, not just sharpening any blade.
Yeah.
But yep, we carry it all. We've got files of all types, hones, leather, even some hone polish in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically diamonds in it, which I highly recommend to anybody. You know, if you enjoy sharpening, you want to get to it. Mirror image edge.
Right.
Get ours is called white gold.
Okay.
Changed my life when it came to sharpening.
All right.
I took a sharp edge to a scary sharp edge just by putting that on the strop and then pulling back on that.
Uh-huh.
Takes every bit of the burr off, and is sharp.
So how long, if you're starting from a broadhead you stuck in the dirt, you know,
never
to,
do that.
Yeah. I'm an expert at that myself.
Yeah.
To the point when you got it back to where you're satisfied with the sharpness on it.
Oh, well, from that, cleaning up the edge, I'd start with a file there and go to the hone. I used to have three different hones, and I guess I've gotten lazy. I've gotten down to just one, like 1,000 grit in that. But I'd say for a head like that, I mean, anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes, depending how particular mm-hmm. I want to be. Normally when I do my sharpening, it's after the kids go to bed, wife and I watching TV and just going away. So, you know, I don't put a time on it. But I'd say for that, 5 to 10 minutes, I'll have it.
Depending on if you got nicks in the blades or what have you.
Oh,
yeah. Because most of the time, I mean, when you miss, you know, even if you do stuff it in the dirt, most of the time the blades don't get nicked, and it's just you know, a matter of just cleaning it up, and a lot of times you're not having to remove much material. It's just, you know, getting that edge back on there.
Yep, yeah, go straight to the hone and then mm-hmm. finish it with the strop and that to have it back. Yeah, but when you get the ugly ones where you hit a rock or not. Mm-hmm.
Looks like serrated all of a sudden.
Yeah. It definitely goes longer because I'm like, no, I don't want to be on the file. You know, I want to be doing the fine honing to it. And it's like, but go back to the file, get a nice clean edge. We always recommend a black Sharpie marker on it. Mm-hmm. That way you know you're on clean steel by the time you're done.
Right.
And then, you know, go it all.
Yeah, good deal. And again, that's you got a video on your website that kind of goes through that process.
Yep. We've always done YouTube videos for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where I focus a lot of my effort is if you go on YouTube and look up our account, we've got dozens and dozens of videos of all aspects to it. But I always try to have good informational videos.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things that's like, all right, well, what do I like when I shop? And I try to replicate that for traditional archery so that people can walk away from the video and learn something, not just buy something.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, being an entrepreneur and you know, having to deal with the day-to-day stuff that you do, you know, running a business and then the content that you want to provide out, you know, get out the door and then the time that it takes shooting the video and editing and all that. And it's such a juggling act. And
not to mention closed captioning. As simple as that seems, that's one of those I've spent an hour on a 5-minute or less video just making sure it's all
right,
closed caption, right?
Yeah, I never even thought about that.
Yeah, it's one of the little things. It's good for if somebody watches it without sound, they'll pop right up. But it's a tedious process.
No doubt. Good deal. Well, hey, I appreciate your time coming over and filling in the listeners. And I'm sure that you guys will be getting hit up from, you know, some guys that are wanting to make that transition. I know I did a seminar yesterday
and
on
It was packed.
Yeah, no, it was a good turnout. I was a little worried there at first, and you know, as that started getting closer to the seminar time, and then all of a sudden seats started filling up. So.
Oh yeah, well they got a nice location here, but it is definitely spaced out a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think a lot because I know I was a bit late to it, and it's like oh the seminar room was all the way over there.
But
you had a lot of folks, which is good to see because
for sure
there is a good healthy interest in traditional and especially in compound shooters because we've seen it. I'm sure you've seen a lot of people come over from compound.
Right.
It's probably where the most dependable growth is for the sport.
Absolutely.
Compound guys coming over traditional. Because
we
all enjoy shooting a bow. We all enjoy hunting. It's just getting that nudge over. And you did a great job with that.
Well, thank you. You know, and to speak to a little bit more about that, I mean, I think that the days of, at least I'm seeing this, and maybe I'm too immersed in the industry to see this, but I know back when I was shooting a compound, there were a lot of what I'll call traditional elitists, and I think that most of those are going by the wayside, and the attitude is changing towards compounds for the most part. And you know, for the guys the few that are listening that maybe still hold some of that attitude, I think that if they were to stop and think about it, we're far more likely to recruit trad guys out of the compound community than we are to recruit guys off the street, know?
Absolutely.
And being a former compound shooter myself, I welcome them with open arms, and I still talk about two guys about compounds. Granted, I can't speak as intelligently about compounds as I used to because I haven't shot one in a number of years and they've changed a lot, during that time. But, I started shooting a compound bare bow, and before laser range finders and, back when when they did have range finders, there were the range finders where you had the two images, that you brought together, and they were very inaccurate, and a long shot with a compound was 40 yards,
Think how it's changed in such a short time.
Oh man,
it's funny when you think on that.
Yeah, no doubt. And so they were a primitive tool then, now guys are shooting stick bows at distances that are compound guys were only able to shoot. Well, back in the day, Fred Bear was launching arrows, but. I think that there has been more restraint now, with the more modern archers and more consideration about, ethical shot distance and what have you. And it's a different world now than it was in Fred Bear's time.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you just think of the number of different shooting styles to it now. Back then there was just instinctive.
Right.
And now, I mean, heck, we could rattle off probably a dozen if we want to.
Yeah, variations.
And all that, and which you can do very accurately.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's actually one of the neatest things, like you said, for the elitist to it, of like how traditional archery has really changed and grown into that to what it encompasses.
Yeah.
Because you can enjoy this sport any of a thousand ways and still be a traditional archer.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
There's not this, hey, this is right. This is what a traditional archer yep. is, and this is what they have to do. You know, there's people that still think that, and I get it. You know, you all think your mm-hmm. your mindset is what it is, which
right.
you can respect that to a degree, but just also know that, you know what? They're shooting a bow, holding all the weight on it. They're
yep.
shooting traditional, and
yep.
they are having a good time.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, there was a stigma about, you know, gap shooting there for a long time.
Oh, there was.
You know,
there
was. The instinctive shooters are turned their nose up at it, and now, I mean, if I start a guy out, you know, shooting a bow, a stick bow, I'm going to start him out shooting gap because he's going to get on the target the fastest. He's going to feel successful, you know, the most quickly, and that's what I want these guys, you know, the new bow hunters to, or new traditional archers to feel, is that feeling of success. They're going to yep. stick with it. And at that point,
well, you need that. If someone's going to
yeah.
get into it and get the bug, like all of us, you know, listen
right.
to this have on it, it's
yep.
you've got to have that sex to begin. That's why there's youth hunting seasons out there
mm-hmm.
to give them the best possible chance for success so that they grow
yeah.
to like it and invest more
yeah.
into it.
And there's no saying at any point in time that you can't switch shooting styles, and you get the mechanics down. And at that point, making a change from shooting, you know, gap or shooting split finger to shooting three under or the other direction. And, you know, at that point, switching shooting styles or aiming styles is a much easier transition than, you know, trying to figure all that stuff out in the very beginning. And mm-hmm. You know, then that becomes the time to experiment once you start to kind of get a handle on the fundamentals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, and that's, you know, once you've been shooting these as long, you've got to play around and have some fun with it.
Sure.
Do different things and see
yep.
what you can do with it.
Yep.
You know, that's why I love 3D shoots and that, where, you know, some people may complain, but, oh, they put that target out at 40 yards. Like, yeah, I don't have to worry about it being wounded here.
Right.
Sling an arrow and have the fun. No, you're
yep.
not. You know, I'm not going to do it when I'm hunting, but this is what it's for.
Absolutely, yeah. No
and yeah, and see the different things you can do with it. I talked to more than a few people to where they have that. I'm like, man, you know, I'm going to go on an elk hunt. I want to be able to shoot far. Okay, well, you know, learn some other ways to hunt with it so you can do that, because
yep.
it is very possible. You know, we get asked a lot because we get all aspects of archers from zero experience to, you know, hunting their whole lives. It's like Olympics, they shoot 90 meters and they put it in the gold.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
possible. Can do anything you want with these bows if you apply yourself to it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So if guys want to get on your mailing list, I imagine there's a tab or a sign up somewhere on
yep.
your website.
Yep. On the website, in the footer of it, we have a request to catalog. Otherwise,
okay.
email us, call us. We're on all the social media sites. You can message us there and we'll get you that. But yeah, the easiest is in the footer of the website. Just go down to the bottom and say request a catalog, and we'll get one out to you. We try to send them every morning.
Okay, fantastic. All right, well, I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Not a worry. Thanks.
If you have a question, topic, or guest that you'd like to hear about, log on to iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Rate the podcast, and in the review, leave your question, topic, or guest suggestion. Any questions posted will be answered at the beginning of the next recorded podcast. Topics and guest suggestions will be considered and pursued. Additionally, the rating will help the podcast grow. You can further support the podcast by logging on to the Stalker Stickbows website and purchasing a Western Bowhunter podcast t-shirt or window sticker from the Stalker store. Thanks for your support. I'm going down for-